Coming up on podcast 1299, the EPA ranges out for the Hyundai Ioniq 5 and the Kia EV6, good, bad, or somewhere in the middle? Well, I'll let you know. Keep listening. Also on the show today, Renault want to give you an all-electric courtesy car if you use one of their dealers. We're talking about bringing food to your car whilst it's charging, and charging your car in an apartment, and lots of other stories as well on the podcast today. So good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily for Sunday, 5th of December. My name is Martin Lee. I go through every EV story, hundreds a day, and whittle them down to what you need to know. Little 20 minutes, your EV blitz of news. I can confirm, by the way, for those wondering, as I've been waiting on the results of a third PCR test, COVID, came back negative. Otherwise, all of the symptoms are the blasted thing is the same. Feeling terrible, lungs filling up. So normally this podcast is a one-take wonder, but pausing between each of the stories, I have been, as I've been catching up to, clear things out. Right, let's start with the news about the EPA range of the Hyundai Ioniq 5 and the Kia EV6. They're out, they've been announced. Now, the EV6 is a little more efficient and can travel a little bit farther than the somewhat more boxy Hyundai Ioniq 5. So, let's start with the different options. What do you got then? Well, there's a rear-wheel drive, standard range EV6. Now, that is going to be lighter, has a 58 kilowatt-hour battery, has a range of 232 miles. And that will beat the equivalent Hyundai Ioniq 5 by 12 miles. The base EV6 also gets 117 mpg-e compared to the Ioniq 5, 110. And so the standard range EV6 is destined for the American market, but actually the standard range Ioniq 5, I'm not so sure about. If anyone's got any clarification, then let me know. I don't think it is. Not sure. If we upgrade to the long-range versions of the car, which is, look, let's face it, many people will want the bigger battery. You want the 77.4 kilowatt-hour battery. And if you're wondering, it is the same size battery, give or take, in the US, by the way. So over here, Ioniq 5 had a smaller battery. It was missing two fewer modules compared to the EV6. That, I think, is being rectified, even if it wasn't a mistake, obviously nothing to rectify, but that is being that weird kind of difference is changing with the 2022 Ioniq 5. Now the first deliveries are out the door and those early customers have got their cars, then they're gonna match the battery packs, same platform of course, of the Hyundai and the Kia. Anyway, that was an aside. So we get it like the US was always promised to get it, with both batteries, 77.4 kilowatt hours, 310 miles of range on the Kia, 303 on the Hyundai. Get the more powerful all-wheel drive version and you do lose miles. That 310 miles of the Kia does drop down to 274, and the Ioniq goes from 303 to 256 if you want the all-wheel drive power, which I don't know. I think you do, because if they do sell a car with all-wheel drive in many markets, then you probably do want that version, which contradicts everything that I've always said about the Model Y. I'd love a Tesla Model Y. Can I have a rear-wheel drive version? It's never snowy here, apart from 2 days a year. I'll just call in and have a snow day. I don't need four-wheel drive, so there you go. Just contradicting myself. Pricing not yet announced for the US market, but the Kia EV6, like, it's going to be around 45k. Starting rear wheel drive standard range. Prices do go up quite quickly when you get a bit happy on the spec sheet. Not so much ticking the options box, but just going, well, I want the long range and I want the all wheel drive. And I think they both over here top out just over 50 grand if you want the big battery, the all-wheel drive as well. I think it's just over 50. The Kia EV6, I think, can, depending on paint, etc., be a 55 grand car. Holy moly. Yes. A link to Car and Driver in the show notes because they had those numbers. Next, Arrival, the company that is aiming to break up the assembly line and build rather micro factories all around the world, is investing $11.5 million to build a high-voltage battery module assembly plant in Charlotte, North Carolina. The plant will provide batteries for electric buses and vans made at the micro factories in Rock Hill, South Carolina, and Charlotte as well. A rival also agreed to collaborate with Li-Cycle, lithium-ion battery recycler, to make a closed-loop EV battery supply chain. Like most other automakers, a rival is recognising the reality of supply chain delays and material shortages and wants to vertically integrate as much of that process as possible and also be a sustainable business as well. According to TechCrunch.com, a rival will be refitting an existing warehouse in order to start production in the third quarter of 2022. Arrival's battery chemistry partner is LG, in case you were wondering. Now, that new plant there in Charlotte will have a new production capacity of 350,000 battery modules a year, used across Arrival's commercial vehicle platforms, according to the company. I'll pop a link to TechCrunch in the show notes if you'd like to read more about a company that I think many people are really on the, you know, the Arrival train. Mainly because of the way they're going about their business in terms of the design, their industrial design, the idea of, rather than just gigafactories, the opposite, little microfactories close to where the vehicles are going to eventually be used and operated. They're commercial vehicles. They look fantastic. Great design. Lots of people are really taken with Arrival. Okay, let's talk about the global plug-in car sales. We're not looking at any particular countries here. We're looking at the global EV sales. Well, plug-in, so hybrids are in here as well. But we're looking at October, even though we're, you know, almost getting to Santa Day because of that delay bringing all the numbers together. So we're talking about November numbers lately. But now let's look at October numbers, but on a global perspective. And global passenger EV sales are increasing, moving towards double-digit market share. In October, 589,000 new plug-ins were sold around the world, 70% more than last year. It also happens to be the second highest monthly ever recorded. The record was September, earlier this year, at 685. October was 589. The market share increased to 8.8%, and the majority of those, you know, I would say 80% of those are pure battery electric vehicles. So far this year, according to Motor One, passenger plug-in electric car sales have exceeded 4.8 million in terms of the pure volume. Market share, 7.2%. So again, when you talk to people, EV haters, people down the pub who don't get it, and they're like, well, you know, EVs are interesting, but no one's really buying any of them, or it's not a big deal. This year alone, they've sold 4.8 million around the world alone, and the market share is heading towards 10% of all new cars being sold. This is not a 1 or 2%er on a global scale anymore. Change is happening, and it's happening really fast. Best-selling model in October was Wuling's Hongguang Mini EV. It always is number one. 40,000 of those were sold in the month of October alone, and yet the Tesla Model Y was a long way behind with 27,000. The top-selling models year-to-date. So if, again, if you look at over the first 10 months of the year, what have we been buying around the globe? Model 3 is still number one on the year. Now, it did have a really bad October. Model Y is coming up fast, but on the year, 377,000 Model 3s have been sold. The Hongguang Mini EV, 328,000. Model Y, to the year, about 281,000. Volkswagen ID4, about 88,000. And then you've got some BYDs, a couple of those, like the Han EV. You've got Volkswagen's ID3 selling about 60,000, and you got some in China, other cars like the GAC Aion and others as well. A lot of Chinese names in that top 10, that top 20. Now, in October, BYD was the top brand, which amassed a record of 80,000 sales. Tesla was the second best on a global perspective, 48,500 in October. Now, the company usually notes lower results in the first month of a quarter, with the highest in the final month of a quarter. Let's talk about Renault. Now, Renault dealers, not the franchise Renault dealers, or these are the actual dealers in the UK owned by Renault. They call it Renault Retail Group. They have switched all of their courtesy cars to electric, the fully electric Renault Zoe, of which I have one on my driveway, and I'm a very big fan. They operate 15 dealerships in England and Wales, have 164 courtesy cars, and no longer, if you take your car in, whatever it is, whether it's a Megane or Captur, whatever, to have it serviced and you get a courtesy car, you will be getting a Renault Zoe full electric vehicle as your courtesy car. I think some of these are called loaners around the world as well. We call them courtesy cars. For many customers, it's the first time they've driven a full electric vehicle. And as you and I know, the minute you drive one, you go, oh, right, it's not witchcraft, it's just a different way of going forwards and backwards, and it's very good as well. Each Zoe will be given to the customers at 100% full state of charge, 245 miles on the Zoe, the new ZE50. They will get an instruction on how to use the vehicle, and if you want to go any further, because, I don't know, your car is in for extended repairs, then you do get details of charging points you can be using. Right, coming up on the podcast very soon, we will talk about how we charge your EVs in apartments and the EV coming out of Vietnam. Stick around. Now, earlier this week on the podcast, we did talk about Electrify America. And another story coming out of them, they've opened one of the largest EV charging stations to date. It's got 14 ultra-fast chargers with solar canopies at Westfield Valley Fair in Santa Clara, California. I mentioned earlier this week they've got battery storage. The point of the story that I gave you before was about the battery storage. Now, though, looking at this wonderful site they've opened with 14 ultra-fast chargers. They actually put the peak charge rate, they paint it on the ground. And so that's great, because normally with EV chargers, sometimes signage is okay. I think the Shell recharge stations I've been to lately say 175 kilowatts on like a big billboard as you're driving up to them. But either way, they're the same. At Electrify America, if you're pulling into a 350 charger or a, you know, 175, 150, whatever, then that's actually painted on the ground in the parking space, which is so good, because if you have a car that can only charge at a slower charge rate, please don't block a charger that could be used by a Taycan or an Audi e-tron GT to charge much faster. This installation, though, at Santa Clara at Westfield is part of their plan to build charging stations at 17 Westfield locations, offering more than 100 individual chargers in seven US states by the end of next year. Focused on customer service, it'll be the first charging location that I know of that offers curbside meals from the restaurants inside the mall. So, what you do is you tell them what charger you're on, your charging location, you order your food from the app, I'm guessing, and then they bring it to your window, a bit like, you know, the old-fashioned American food brought to your car, going back to, you know, that kind of, would it be 50s and 60s, I'm thinking, maybe I'm getting my cultural references wrong. In my head, I've got the image of convertible American cars, and normally I would guess women on roller skates coming out and bringing you food while you're parked up. That is coming to EVs. Now, normally I would have said, come on, how hard is it really to plug in your car, go to the takeaway, get your food and take it back to your car? But since we had a little fella, my perspective on, well, many things in life has changed, but my perspective on that has changed, because one of the things that we do at the minute to get him to fall asleep is to drive him around, particularly his afternoon nap. So he'll have a good couple of hours sleep in the afternoon, and to get him to doze off, we'll often drive around. And wouldn't it be amazing if I could think, well, I can combine his afternoon nap about 1 o'clock in the afternoon with a cheeky little trip to the fast charger, get a top up and have a little snack for daddy as well. I can't leave him alone in the car, but I certainly can order food to the window. That would suit me down to the ground. And it's a brilliant idea. And often, when you are charging, you don't want to leave your vehicle, or you want to, you know, do some work and catch up, and you're on your laptop, or maybe you want to watch something on the screen on your in your car, or something on YouTube, or, I don't know, listen to a guy who sounds like he's dying on a podcast. Well, you might not want to leave your vehicle. This is brilliant. I think that should be as many places as possible. Next, we'll talk about car charging in apartments. And this article coming out of some work being done even in California, which is the largest EV market in the country, getting chargers installed in multi-unit housing, which is, you know, what they call a block of flats. Multi-unit housing is met with significant obstacles that range from ownership inertia to power supplies. And to make electric vehicles more accessible to all Californians, at-home charging needs to extend beyond newer single-family developments into an overlooked area, apartment buildings. This will require significant changes to building codes, public incentives, and commitments from the building owners, says an article on govtech.com. Well, there are a litany of obstacles ranging from cost, the power limitations in buildings, site-specific problems like parking spaces, garages versus surface lots, and even how to wire up a charger to an electric meter. I'll pop a link to that story in the show notes because it's really interesting kind of discussion around how we get people who aren't able to charge in their own driveway or outside the house to go EV. How does the Vietnamese EV sound to you? The Vietnamese company VinFast is determined to enter the US market with their all-electric models. The Pininfarina-designed VF-E35 and the VF-E36, both previewed in pre-production form at the LA Auto Show, aimed at the likes of the Model X and the Model Y from Tesla and the upcoming EVs from the likes of GM, the sort of SUV-sized vehicles that Americans want. Now, Reuters reporting that VinFast has a parent company, VinGroup, and they're holding talks with investors with the goal of raising $1 billion in equity to get these cars into production, according to Car Buzz. One of those investors includes Qatar. Now, Qatar's $330 billion sovereign wealth fund could be investing. VinFast could still be heading for a US market public listing next year as well, which would generate additional and much-needed funds. Okay, let's talk about Tesla. Officially, by the look of it, eliminating the Model Y long-range rear-wheel drive, as recently mentioned on this podcast. Earlier this week, they updated the owner accounts of Tesla reservation holders of the Model Y, advising them that they must change their order. So, while variants of the Model Y currently include two all-wheel drive options, at least in the North American markets, it doesn't come as much of a surprise, according to Teslarati.com, that Tesla is scrapping the plans for the long-range rear-wheel drive completely. Asking those reservation holders, you're going to have to choose something else, I'm afraid. They cancelled the standard range rear-wheel drive variant of the Model Y in February, and they still manufacture that vehicle, though, in the Chinese market for export as well, which is what I would have, long-range rear-wheel drive, if I ever had the option coming out of Berlin. Now, well, final story today, we'll talk about Foxconn and Saudi Arabia in conversations. Foxconn is aggressively focusing on its EV plans and its expansion, as it's now being reported the company will be talking to Saudi Arabian investors to develop a joint venture that will make EVs. Based on a report by Automotive News, Saudi Arabia's public investment fund will create a new entity called Velocity, and it'll hold a major stake in this new venture between them. Foxconn will give the software, the EV stuff, the electronics, and the architecture for these new vehicles. Saudi Arabia has been looking for opportunities to diversify its economy from oil, says the Hindustan Times website. Establishing domestic car making has long been in its plans. However, it's not come to fruition until now. The company's, to the country's public investment fund, of course, was a major, major shareholder in Lucid back in 2018 and encouraging them to set up a manufacturing base near Jeddah. Saudi Arabia, of course, with a big public investment fund, like previously mentioned, Qatar, and like both of those, particularly controversial in terms of using their money to make EVs. Lots of people who drive electric vehicles, not everybody, of course, but many people who drive EVs are thinking about how to be the best they can in things like the cars they drive, their carbon footprint, the kind of emissions they have. But that does also stretch further towards, as many EV drivers, some of them I've spoken to, have looked at things like their diet and you know, their eating and how they behave in many parts of their life, like how they heat their homes and whether they use gas to cook with. That also extends to things like, I find, things like human rights. And again, not everybody, but I do find that many EV drivers I talk to tend to be, at the moment, many of them are early adopters, I'll give you that, a little bit more aware of where they fit into the world, if that makes sense. And they do think about things like human rights. And so, you know, I know some people who like Lucid, but were still bothered by where the money came from. Anyway, moving on, question of the week with emobilitynorway.com. And this will obviously be rolled over to next Sunday as I'm playing, you know, catch up. So, which EV makers are on Santa's naughty list and which ones are on Santa's nice list? And why? Give me a reason as well, and I'll read them out next Sunday. Hello at evnewsdaily.com. Thank you so much to the premium partners of the podcast. That'll be you, Phil Roberts of Electric Future. That'll be you, Brad Crosby. That'll be you, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati. Audi of Cincinnati East. Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, also National Car Charging. Now, they're on the US mainland. If you want their Hawaiian company, that'll be Aloha Charge. Derek Riley, check out his EV Review Island YouTube channel. He is relentless in getting the greatest cars to drive on his channel. Also, Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, and Jan at emobilitynorway.com. Have a good one. See you tomorrow, and remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.